Welcome, everyone, to the Voices stage here at the Full Circle Fair. My name is Matt Murphy. I'm the general manager of WERU. Well, thank you all for coming here to the Full Circle Fair, and especially to the Voice stage right now, to hear Cindy Sheehan speak. Cindy Sheehan is with Gold Star Families for Peace and After Downing Street, two organizations working to end what many consider the madness coming out of the Bush administration. All of us sitting here have had some experience of loss in our lives, a loved one, a friend, someone who we were very close to. And again, many of us have the experience of being from completely enraged to very depressed about what the administration is doing in its so-called war on terrorism. There aren't that many people, though, who have that sense of loss and that outrage coming at exactly the same time from exactly the same source, the Bush administration's war in Iraq. And that's something that Cindy Sheehan has. And WERU wants to certainly extend our solace and condolences to her and our support in the courageous work that she's doing. It takes people like Cindy speaking out to make some changes happen. It's easy for someone to say, oh, well, you've never been there. That's why Veterans for Peace are so important. They've been there. They're qualified to speak on this. You know, everyone's qualified to speak on it, on this subject. But there's a little bit of extra credibility for Veterans for Peace. And we're so happy to see so many Veterans for Peace T-shirts here today. And it's so important for people like this to speak the truth for all of us. Rob Shetterly's here, and his series of paintings, portraits, Americans who speak the truth, is very important. And I understand that Cindy is having her portrait painted just about now. And I want everyone to remember that each one of us here is a truth speaker, and we really need to speak up and keep speaking up. Use community radio for that. Use your kitchen table for that. Use anywhere you can to do that. Right now, please give a huge welcome for a great hero to all of us, Cindy Sheehan.
Oh, my gosh. Sit down. Oh, it's so wonderful to be here. I want to thank WERU for inviting me. We've had this on my schedule for months now. And since then, I was invited to be in Detroit today to speak at John Conyers Downing Street event. I was invited to speak in D.C. and L.A. and Berkeley, but I had already had this on the agenda. And last year, when I was here in January, I was so mad at everybody who lived here. I was like, how can you live here? And why would you invite someone that was raised in Los Angeles to come here in January? And then people go, don't you have snow in California? I'm like, yeah, but we're not stupid enough to live there. We go there and ski, you know, and we don't let it snow where we live. So, and about telling the truth, it's so easy to tell the truth. It's hard to lie. Because you have to remember your lies, and then you have to, like, remember who you told them to. Then you, like, I don't know, I sweat. My eyes twitch. So I think telling the truth is so easy, and it doesn't take any courage or bravery. It takes more courage and bravery to get up in the morning when my son isn't here. So to tell the truth is just nothing. And people always tell me, you know, you don't even know what you're getting into because these people are powerful and these people are dangerous. And my answer is, what are they going to do, kill me? You know, put me out of my misery? So it does, you know, it doesn't take any courage. It just takes a lot of money. And so I've been using my son's blood money to finance getting the message out about the human cost of war. And that's what I'm an expert on, and that's what I talk about. I have a very high-tech presentation. I'm going to pass around some pictures of Casey, so I just want to make sure I get him back. There's been a phrase going around that I just heard the other day, and I'm sure it's been a phrase for a long time, but I just heard it. It's called skin in the game. Have you guys heard that phrase? That's what's going on in America today. People do not care about our illegal and immoral invasion and occupation of Iraq because they don't have any skin in the game. You know, they don't think that what we're doing is harming humanity. Even if it's not directly affecting them personally, they are being damaged by what we're doing in Iraq. We're killing innocent people. We're sending our brave young people over there to die for lies. And what we have in this country is an infotainment news media that's a propaganda tool of the government. And if our country isn't already a fascist country, we're sliding rapidly into fascism when the government controls the media and when corporations control the government, then that's what's the definition of a fascist state. And if we don't have that in America, we're going to be having it real soon, and that's what we're sliding into. So most Americans don't even have to think about Iraq. You know, they can go through an entire day, week, months without even thinking about it because it's not on the news. Now we have Karl Rove, who is a despicable, evil man who needs to be fired. But you know what's going to happen if he's fired? He's still going to run the show. You know, just because he doesn't have an office in the White House, he's got a cell phone, he's got a computer, and he's being sacrificed for the vice president's office. Because the vice president's office is the one who outed Valerie Plame. And so people fire Karl Rove, and you know, most of America, they've heard of Karl Rove, and they'll be appeased by that firing when the evil is still going on. And then, so to take the heat off Karl Rove, we appoint a Supreme Court justice. You know, and I was cynically telling somebody, and this is a horrible thing to say, but whenever a nice, pretty, you know, white girl disappears, that's all over the news for days and days and days and days. You know, the runaway bride came back, so that superseded everything. You know, and that's what America wants. America wants to hear stories about that. They don't want to hear stories about depleted uranium. They don't want to hear stories about our soldiers coming back sick with DU contamination. They don't want to hear about their wives and partners having to have hysterectomies because their partner's semen is contaminated with depleted uranium. They don't want to hear about the babies already being born in this country from this invasion who are deformed. And let's talk about Iraq that's going to be contaminated and that whole entire Middle Eastern area for billions of years. We can't even comprehend the length of time. It's not in our, you know, if a billion years is a foot, then what we're doing over there is nothing. You know, it just is hard to comprehend, and people don't want to think about it. And you know what? God damn it, I don't want to have to think about it either. But I have to think about it every second of every day, because I had skin in the game, and my skin was killed. You know, and I really resent seeing people that have support our troops, magnets. I asked them, I said, what do you do? What do you do? What did you do today to support the troops? Well, I prayed for them. And I'm, no, that's not good enough, because you're putting a bumper sticker that says support the troops, and your government is sending them to die in a war that is based on lies, deceptions, betrayals. They're killing innocent people to control oil fields, to control natural resources of another country. They're dying and killing innocent people so corporations can come in and have a new market for pipelines, water, and oil pipelines. And your government is sending over them to die, and they're sending them over there. It's been over 2 years, and their Humvees still aren't armored. It's been over 2 years, and not every soldier has body armor. My son was killed in an ambush wearing his desert camis with a green Vietnam flak jacket on. You know, they might as well painted a target on his back and says, shoot me. You know, and they sent him in this battle in the back of an LMTV. And you veterans know what that is. It's a trailer that doesn't even have canvas on it. And they sent him to be ambushed. And 8 soldiers were killed in that ambush. Our soldiers are getting rotten food to eat because KBR is delivering the food. But because of the security risks, sometimes it's getting to them already spoiled. They don't have enough water. They don't have enough supplies. And we all know that they don't have the proper planning and the proper leadership. A big problem in Iraq is that the kids get there, and I'm sorry, I'm going to call them kids. You know, I know that they're men and I know they're soldiers, but to me, they're kids. Our babies get there and they replace another unit. And they don't even talk to each other. You know, the unit that's been there doesn't say, well, you know, this is a hotbed of activity that you don't want to go there. You know, they don't communicate with each other. So every unit that goes in is starting from scratch. And that's what happened to my son's unit. With the first, after 5 days, 8 of them were killed in an ambush. And they learn how to do all this. By the time they leave, they're experts. And most of them are killed when they first get there. You know, and to me, I used to manage people. And my ideal situation was to you know, have the person that I had to replace stay and train that other person, like for a week, you know, do some on-the-job training. And you don't just throw somebody in a job, you know, and not train them, especially one where there's life and death. So what we do for Gold Star Families for Peace, and what I do, I've made it my life's purpose, is to go around the country and tell people the cost of war, to tell people how terrible it is to have your son die for a mistake, and how they don't want it to happen to them. Just to wake our country up. That's what we need. We need a major wake-up call in America right now. On April 3rd, 2004, I went shopping. I bought a dress. I bought some CDs. And I was worried about my son because he was in Iraq, and I thought, well, if I go shopping, what do Americans do when they want to get, when they want to forget their troubles? We go shopping, right? Well, that's what I do. And so I can remember everything about that day, about Saturday, April 3rd. And I remember the CDs I bought, and I remember the dress I bought because I ended up wearing it to my son's funeral. And the next day, I woke up at 9 o'clock, and Casey was already dead, and I didn't know it. But that day was the first day in 3 weeks since he had left the country that I felt relaxed. I wasn't worried. I wasn't, you know, distracted. I wasn't upset all day until 5 o'clock when I saw on CNN Humvees burning. And they had said that 8 soldiers were killed in Baghdad. And I told my husband, I said, one of them was Casey. And Pat, you know, Pat knew it too, but he was going, oh, it couldn't be Casey. He just got there. He's a Humvee mechanic. He wouldn't be in a battle. There's 120,000 soldiers. Odds are it wasn't. It's not Casey. And I just knew it. And if you're a mom, you knew how I knew it. And about 8:30, I took my dogs for a walk because I thought maybe it wasn't Casey this time. And then immediately you have the guilt thinking, well, if it wasn't Casey, some other mom is going to be destroyed. You know, but you have that relief and the guilt at the same time. So I was walking my dogs, and I'm thinking, you know, lady, you really seriously need to get help because this, he's only been there a week. How are you going to last an entire year of his deployment? You know, I was going to find some support group or something of mothers or family members that had skin in the game, like me. And I got home from walking my dogs, and I turned the corner of my garage, and I saw 3 Army officers standing in my living room. And I knew they weren't there to tell me Casey was fine or that Casey was injured. And I walked in the door, and my husband had been folding a pair of pants, and he was just standing there. And my daughter had just walked in from work, and she was just standing there. They wouldn't even tell them why they were there because I was next of kin. But they don't have to say anything.
They just have to show up at your door, and you know exactly what they're there for. I'm gonna read a poem that my daughter wrote, in a little bit to talk about that terrible time, and an essay that I wrote. So on April 4th, my life was devastated, turned upside down, and for nothing. You know, I equate what happened to my son like being, he was killed by a drunk driver. If someone had taken the keys away from that drunk driver before he got in the car, Casey would still be alive. If Congress hadn't handed the keys to George Bush, knowing that he was a maniac, and knowing that the war in Iraq was wrong, knowing that, and that's why Congress did it, because they knew that if they said yes for the war, that it was going to be a horrible mistake, but if they said no for the war, then people, what would our country have said? Oh, you're spineless. You don't want to defend America. You know, you want to just give America to the traitors. So Congress took the easy way out. They gave the authority to George Bush, even though they knew he was drunk, a power drunk, literally a dry drunk. And I'm sorry if I'm going to offend anybody here, but I don't think so. He's a moron. And they gave... They gave the keys to the country to him to kill my son, almost 1,800 other brave Americans, and just untold damage and devastation in Iraq. We don't even know because they're not counted. They're uncounted, and they don't count for anything. They're what we call acceptable collateral damage, you know? And people tell me we're fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them over here. I'm like, well, you know, when were the babies coming over here and when were they going to kill you? We're killing innocent people over there. They're not terrorists. It's so important right now. We have to take our country back. I met a lady who's running for governor here. We can't allow it to go any further. We have to do it now. And if it's by the electoral process, which I don't even have any faith in because our elections aren't valid, but we the people are the only checks and balances on this government. Congress is Republican, the Supreme Court is handpicked to do whatever the administration wants them to do. The media used to be checks and balances on our government, but they're not anymore. And if we didn't have progressive media like Democracy Now! And Air America and the internet, we wouldn't know anything. We wouldn't be here. You know, we'd be all at Flag Day celebrations or something because we would think that what we were doing in Iraq was right. So being a patriot does not mean waving your flag and saying, my country right or wrong. I was on a show with a lady like that one time, and she goes, her son was wounded, so, you know, she had the authority to talk, and she said, you have to support the president in a time of war, whether he's right or wrong. And I saw the tape of it, and you should have seen my face. I rolled my eyes, and when it got to me, I was like, oh, no, that is not what being American is. Being an American is fighting for your country. And when your president is wrong, and this president is so wrong, you need to stand up for your country. We need to stand up for our children and our grandchildren and our grandchildren's grandchildren. Because if we don't, we're going to give them not only our country is based on war, we have a paradigm of war in this country, there's global warming, he's destroying the environment. He's destroying everything about this world. And we have to take that back from them. We need to stop George Bush's global war of terror. I was also on a show, and this man called, and he said, the definition of a terrorist is someone who kills innocent people. And I'm saying, well, then George Bush is the biggest terrorist in the world because he's responsible for more deaths than any other terrorist that's operating right now. And why are they terrorists and we're heroes? You know, when we were getting the British out of our country, we were patriots. But the people who wanted my son and his buddies out of their country, they're terrorists. Why? What's the difference? You know, so we have to stop George Bush's global war of terror against the world. And how can we do that? Well, there's several things going on right now that we can support. Number one is the resolution of inquiry into the Downing Street memos. Barbara Lee introduced the ROI the other day. You need to pressure your congresspeople, your senators, and other people's congresspeople and senators to vote. Well, actually, it's not the senators yet. We got to get Congress to investigate the memo and the resolution of inquiry. And so we have to just start pressuring all the congresspeople. And I walk the halls of Congress. I do that often. And I take that picture, Casey, seven months old, and I say, I'm really shy. I hold a picture of Casey, and I say, when you voted to give George Bush the authority to invade Iraq, you knew it was wrong. And don't even tell me you didn't. You know, I was a mother from California, and I knew he was lying through his teeth. So you don't tell me, with all of your advantages, you didn't know that this was wrong. I said, and you know it was wrong then, and you know it's still wrong, and people with skin in the game want our kids home now. And I don't care if you're a Republican, and I don't care if you're a Democrat. It is your constitutional duty to investigate this memo. And if it proves to be true, it's your constitutional duty to vote for articles of impeachment on this man. And not just George Bush. George Bush and Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and Rice and everybody that lied to the country. And we might have to go down to the guy that picks up the dogs in Washington, D.C., but anybody who lied to us needs to go. They abrogated their responsibilities, and they knew it was wrong, and they did it anyway. And the only way they can make up for it is by impeaching him and bringing our troops home right now. That's the only way they can make up for it. And less of them are telling me, oh, dear, you're just a poor, sweet mother. A lot of them are starting to listen, and we have to remind them that when they raised the right hand and put their left hand on the Bible, they didn't swear an oath to protect George Bush or the Republican Party. They swore an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States. And they need to be reminded of that over and over and over again until the maniacs are out of power. There's been such a... One of the reasons is the peace movement is not effective as it could be is there's so much division in the peace movement. You know, there's people who say, bring them home now, and Gold Star Families for Peace and Military Families Speak Out, Veterans for Peace, Iraq Veterans Against the War, we're all on the bring them home now thing. You know, John Kerry came home from Vietnam when he still had a spine. I don't know, maybe he lost it after that. And he said... You know, his famous quote, how can you ask a soldier to be the last one to die for a lie? You know, and then another admiral in Vietnam was asked, well, how can we get our troops out of there? And the admiral said, by boat. You know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist or these big plans for withdrawal. You know, it just takes people saying, bring them home now, bring them home now, because the despicable, evil people in power plan on bringing them home never. They're building bases the size of Sacramento, California, and you don't build bases that size if you're planning on leaving anytime soon. They're going to use those bases as their jumping off point for the cancer spread of imperialism in the Middle East. And that's what they're going to do. And Donald Rumsfeld a few weeks ago said that we'll be there at least 12 years. And what did he say at first? Oh, it'll be, you know, people were saying it'll be a cakewalk. We won't have any casualties. We won't be there long. He's saying at least 12 years now. And the soccer safety moms and the NASCAR dads in the flyover states, the ones that I fly over all the time when I bounce back and forth between the East and West Coast, they need to be told that. They need to be told, look at your babies going into kindergarten. They're going to be dying in George Bush's war. Because George Bush and the neocon cabal have plans for eternal war. Because it's making them and their buddies rich. And if you haven't read Smedley Butler's War is a Racket, you need to read that. If I had read that before Casey joined the military, he never would have. And this is my mission, to save other mothers' children, because it's too late for my son. So they're building these enormous bases. They're talking about a draft. And right now they're using anything in their means to avoid a draft, because they know that that would pretty much be political suicide for them. But they're touting, and the VFP probably backed me up on this, they're touting their retention rates. They're saying their retention rates are phenomenal. Well, you know why they're staying? Because they're promised bonuses anywhere from $5,000 to $150,000 if they reenlist and stay in Iraq, or they cannot reenlist and be stop-lost and stay there anyway. So that's their choice. So what would you do? Well, if I'm going to stay, I might as well get the bonus, which they don't get the bonus anyway. So they're being held against their will. And I just wrote an article about a soldier story. Soldiers are starting to email their families or friends and saying, this is what's happening to me. And that's what happened to my son. In August of 2003, he was still in the States, and he reenlisted because he was supposed to be out in August of 2004 while his unit was in Iraq. And he was told, you might as well reenlist because you're going to have to stay anyway. So they're being held against their will. They're being stop-loss. They have the Individual Ready Reserve, the IRR. The Veterans for Peace know that when you sign up for the military, you think you're signing up for 4 years, but you're signing up for 8 years. You know, unless my friend Camilo Mejia, who was a resistor, is in IRR until 2031, because he was convicted of being AWOL. How many years is that, 25 years? He's going to be an old man by then. The Downing Street memo proves that this war was premeditated, prefabricated. My son's death was premeditated murder. And I am not going to rest until somebody, I don't even care who it is held accountable for the mess that's going on in there. And the reason we need to impeach everybody is because we need somebody for president that won't pardon these war criminals. Because after they're impeached, they need to be tried for war crimes. We also have House Resolution 55 that Dennis Kucinich and Walter Jones and Ron Paul introduced. It's an exit strategy bill, calls for a plan by the end of this year, and the troops starting to be withdrawn by October of 2006. That's not soon enough for me, but at least somebody's talking about an exit withdrawal, an exit strategy, and that's really good that that's being talked about. There's an out-of-Iraq caucus. I don't know if the congressman here belongs to the out-of-Iraq caucus. Does anybody know? That's kind of a thing within the Progressive Democrats of America. They have a caucus of Congress people that specifically want to end the war in Iraq, which is pretty safe for them because they come from progressive districts and their constituents are behind them. But we need to urge, you know, all Congress people to join this. Walter Jones hasn't joined yet, but he did an amazing turnaround. He did a 180 We can put him up as a model for people who can change their minds, admit they made a mistake. You know, that is just so rare in this our government, for anybody to admit they made a mistake and to say, well, I can't do anything about what happened before, but I can go forward and we can stop this so it doesn't happen again. And so we have to put these people up as models so other Congress people will follow suit and do that. It just is amazing to me that people would think of votes and money before human life. You know, that I mean, I can't even think of looking at myself in the mirror if I don't try to do everything I can do to stop this. But these people are lying. These people are taking money. These people that profit from war, you know, are eating. They're feasting off our children's bodies and bodies of innocent people. And to me, that is just like so, that paradigm is just so foreign to me. And we have to start doing that. We have to start taking back our humanity and taking back what life and death means, because this is life and death. You know, this isn't, you know, somebody getting fired from their job or losing a seat in the House. These are families that have been devastated by this war. You know, and I can't even think of the Iraqi families who have been devastated by this war. They're losing their entire families. They can't go out at night. They don't have clean water. It's 130 degrees. Their animals are dying. That breaks my heart. I have 3 dogs and 2 cats. You know, people come to America and go down the dog food aisle and they go, wow, your animals are treated better than us human beings in our country. You know, this is just a tragedy of immense proportions. And we just need to start reminding people about that. That's why I take a picture of Casey with me, because I know they all have children. I know they must have, like the Grinch, at least a little black heart that might be brought to life. So we have to remind people about that, that it's life and death. I want to be arrested. I've tried everything. I even tried to crash a $25,000 plate dinner in St. Petersburg, Florida, where President Bush was, and they wouldn't arrest me. I tried to walk back, and they were like bumping me, get back, ma'am, get back, ma'am. So I thought, well, I don't really want to be shot, so, you know, I think they would shoot me before they arrested me. But I love this quote, and I always say it, and I don't quote it verbatim, but Henry David Thoreau went to jail during the Mexican-American War because he refused to pay his war taxes. And his buddy Ralph Waldo Emerson supposedly visited him. And Ralph was like, what are you doing in here? And Thoreau said, why aren't you in here? This is the only place for a moral person to be right now. I didn't pay my taxes for 2004. I'm never paying my taxes again because I'm not going to support a government that does this to people. And I'm ashamed that I ever paid my taxes and supported the killing that goes on. But like Walter Jones, I can't go back. The only way I can go is forward. And there's a big hill in our way, but what are we going to do? The only way is up, and we got to go up, and we got to defeat these people, and we got to know that they're the biggest group of evil people that have ever gathered in one place in the history of the world. I hate to be so dramatic, but I'm a drama queen, and I see that I look at, you know, Hitler's cabal of people, and I look at Bush's cabal of people, and I don't see a difference. But I also see good people. I see wonderful people that are coming together. I meet people, and it's like we're instantly in love with each other. It's like our souls are saying, wow, I finally found you. You know, we're finally together again. It's like we're being brought together to defeat the evil people. And I hate to go off on this, because I'm not religious or anything, but I feel it in my heart. I know that that's what's happening. And the evil people aren't going to win. Darkness cannot win as long as there's one spark of light. As long as there's one of us left, they're not going to win. So we won't let them win. And we'll gather more good people together. I mean, it only takes, like, we need about, I would say 100,000 good people for one of them because they're so evil. We need to gather the evil people together and to fight again. I mean the good people. The evil people are already together. The good people together to fight what's going on in our world. And we have to know that it's our world. It's not just America. It's our world that we have to protect because we're all part of it. We're all part of humanity. So please help me and be the light. Let's all be the light. Okay, I'm going to close with an essay that I wrote, and then we'll have some questions. Wow, I talked a long time. This is called The Sounds of Hope. This, I'm going to read first my daughter's poem. I know a lot of you have probably read it. But Carly's poem is what saved my life. It gave me a reason for living. It's why I'm here today. It's why I'm, didn't take my whole bottle of sleeping pills when I had the chance, because she gave me my purpose. She wrote it about 3 weeks after Casey was killed, and I was reading yet another poem that was saying, oh, how wonderful it was that Casey gave his life for America's safety and for freedom and democracy. And I didn't believe that before Casey died, and I certainly did not believe it after Casey died. But I appreciated that people would reach out and, you know, do things like that. I didn't think they were doing it to hurt me, but it, you know, it did. So I was reading one, and Carly goes, Mom, do you want to hear a poem I wrote? And so I said yes, and that was my fate, what happened when she read me this poem. It's called A Nation Rocked to Sleep, a poem for Casey. Have you ever heard the sound of a mother screaming for her son? The torrential rains of a mother's weeping will never be done. They call him a hero. You should be glad he's won. But have you ever heard the sound of a mother screaming for her son? Have you ever heard the sound of a father holding back his cries? They say he must be brave because his boy died for another man's lies. The only thing he allows himself are long, deep sighs. Have you ever heard the sound of a father holding back his cries? Have you ever heard the sound of taps played at your brother's grave? They say he died so the flag will continue to wave. But I believe he died because they had oil to save. Have you ever heard the sound of taps played at your brother's grave? Have you ever heard the sound of a nation rocked to sleep? The leaders want to keep you numb so the pain won't be too deep. But if we, the people, let them continue, another mother will weep. Have you ever heard the sound of a nation being rocked to sleep? You may clap. Everybody asks me where they can get a copy of that poem. It's on the Gold Star Families for Peace website, gsfp.org. The sounds my daughter wrote about in her inspired poem, so poignantly and amazingly, a few weeks after her brother, my son, was killed in Iraq, have been repeated over and over again too many times since the criminal invasion occupation of Iraq began in March of 2003. These sounds are imprinted in my DNA. I will never, ever forget the night of April 4th, 2004, when I found out that Casey had been killed. After what seemed an eternity, I finally began to wonder who or what was making those horrible screaming noises. Then I realized it was me. It couldn't have been Casey's father, because he was paralyzed in stunned silence, holding the pair of pants he had been folding when the deliverers of death news arrived. I will also never forget the day when we buried my sweet boy, my oldest son. I'll never forget the playing of taps, or the violent and, in hindsight, thoughtless volley of the 21-gun salute. If I live to be a very old lady and forget everything else, I will never forget when the general handed me the folded flag that had lain on Casey's coffin as his brothers and sisters standing behind me sobbed. The saddest thing about the obscene sounds of violence is that they never should have been heard in the first place. From Maine to California, I plugged you guys, and from Baghdad to Fallujah, these dirges were unnecessary. In my travels and from hundreds of emails, phone calls, and cards and letters, I'm discovering that people who formerly supported the invasion of Iraq are withdrawing their support. I even believe that many of our fellow citizens who still support the ignominy, it's easy to write but hard to say, ignominy of Iraq, are doing so because they are clinging to the deception so desperately because they want the deceptions to be the truth. It will be painful to come to terms with supporting the lies of this administration. It will be painful to know that wholesale killing of innocent people occurred because you and so many others believe the betrayals. But acknowledging the mistake is the first step to correcting it. And believe me, acknowledging the mistake is not as painful as hearing those devastating sounds. Representative Walter Jones, Republican from North Carolina, has realized that he had been duped into supporting the invasion. I have spoken to him about his change of heart, and he is so sad that his wholehearted support of the administration helps cause so many good people to hear those gut-wrenching sounds of grief. But he is going forward to do what he can to end this occupation as soon as possible. He has co-sponsored a bipartisan bill with other congressional leaders like Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul to force our administration into a troop withdrawal beginning October 1st, 2006. The bill is a good first step to ensuring that families here in America and all over the world do not have to suffer needless death and war. However, I would like the withdrawal to begin tomorrow, because I don't even want to try to imagine the sounds Casey heard before he died. I don't want to imagine the sound of the bullet strong enough to pierce the Kevlar coating on his helmet to rip through his skull. I don't want to know the sound of a mother in Iraq wailing for her entire family. These sounds need to stop immediately. It is time to bring our troops home. The sound I do want to hear is the sound of a nation waking up. I will rejoice to hear the sounds of the collective mea culpa and the beating of breasts. I want to hear the deafening clicks as a steady stream of news attainment is turned off, propaganda that is turning us into zombies who are numb to the truth. I want to hear the sound of our children getting off planes and boats from Iraq to the joyful squealing of their children and the deep sighs of relief from their spouses, parents, and loved ones. I want to hear all of us lifting up our voices in chorus and singing, "We will never let this happen again." Thank you.
We have 10 minutes for questions, and ERU wants to record all your questions so we can play it back. In order to do that, we need to use that microphone and shout it out loud enough so that Roger's microphone here can pick it up. So any questions? We have 10 minutes.
First, I'd like to say I'm very sorry for your loss, and you're a brave person. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your child's decision to enlist and what the pressures were, whether the school was complicit in that, what discussions you had with him, and given what you know now, what your advice would be to parents that are in the same situation.
Good question. Casey was in college already. He had been in college for 3 years. He had resisted military recruiters for 5 years since he was a junior in high school. He was promised so many things that the recruiter broke. He was promised a $20,000 signing bonus. He got $4,500 of that, and he was told the rest would be for his education. He was promised he could finish college in the Army. They would never even let him take a class. He was promised he could be a chaplain's assistant. When he got to boot camp, he was told that MOS was full, so he could be a Humvee mechanic or a cook. So he chose a Humvee mechanic. And his recruiter also promised him that even if there was a war, he would never see combat because he scored so high on the ASVAB test. And that's something that they're still promising the kids. If they will enlist, they won't have to go to Iraq. You know, the recruiters are like used car salesmen or Amway salesmen. They'll say anything to get you to sign on the dotted line. The only difference is the contract that our young people sign is only binding to the young people, not to the government. So once they take the oath of office, the government doesn't have to fulfill their part of the contract. we didn't talk to Casey about it because he did it before he talked to us. He was 21 years old, and we were devastated. And that's one thing I said, you know. He goes, Mom, you don't have to worry because my recruiter said that I'd never see combat. And I said, honey, you know, I don't know anything about the Army, but it seems to me that if there's a war, everybody sees combat. And he said, oh, no, Sergeant, whatever his name is, said I'd never see combat, so you don't have to worry. So, you know, he was in Sadr City for 5 days before he was killed in combat. And he was still a Humvee mechanic. And I tell parents all the time, don't let your kids do it. As long as people run our country who care more about their checkbooks and their bank accounts and care more about their bombs and their bullets than they do about our children, do not let your child do it. And parents who already have their kids, I say, do whatever you can and don't let them go to Iraq. Take them to Canada, shoot them, anything. Don't let them go to Iraq because they're going to be misused and abused by the maniacs that run the country. And, you know, I was a history major, and I never realized that maniacs have always run our country. You know, I used to accuse George Bush of defiling the Oval Office, but how was it ever filed or whatever? You know, it's always been a crooked place. You know, and if we know, get the true history of our country out, and, you know, how murder goes on all the time to enrich the corporations and the war machine, you know, until we can make it a country that we're proud of again, no. Don't let your kids do it. Don't make our same mistake, because it's a tragic mistake that you can't take back.
Remember, and you're in Maine, and so the term maniac doesn't really have
Okay. What do you want me to call him? Texas EX? Tex EX?
You know, Howard Zinn and Noam Chomsky do talk about how during the Vietnam War they went around and maybe there were like five groups around the country. Now, you yourself have been out on the road. What's it like out there in America? You know, we don't get this news or anything. So what's it like out there for the anti-war forces?
I think I see such a grassroots growth of peace movement. And after the elections, I said, we got to get all these grassroots people who tried to defeat Bush together and make it a peace movement. And that's really happening. But I don't do a lot, like I said, in the flyover states, you know, where the soccer safety moms and NASCAR dads put George Bush into power. I don't do a lot there, but I get emails all the time saying, you know, we supported the war, we don't support it anymore, you know. So I see that, I see a big turnaround. I understand you guys, I know you guys have a great peace movement here and grassroots and progressive movement in Maine, and I'm fortunate to live in California where we do the same thing. But we have to just, like I said, you know, tell them it's okay if you supported the war at first. Well, it's not okay, but, you know, you just have to admit you made a mistake, and let's go forward, and let's try to end this thing. And it's really hard to get them to care because, like I said, they don't have skin in the game. But there's so many amazing people like you who do care that don't have skin in the game. So I do see I'm encouraged, and I have a lot of hope for the peace movement and for getting our kids home.
Hi there, my name is Jean Hay Bright. I used to live across the street here. I'm a commercial organic farmer, and I'm running for U.S. Senate. I already have a link on my webpage to a letter you wrote to George Bush around Memorial Day, very powerful letter. I want to really thank you for coming here. And I don't know if you noticed while you were sitting up here, but we had to keep bringing in chairs for people to sit in. This is, you've packed them in, and I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
I have been running for office since February, and I wanted to let you know that in Maine, the biggest reaction I do get from people of all stripes is my opposition to the Iraq War. So this is very powerful in the state of Maine, and I think that I'm hoping next year when I am on the ballot that people will respond to that. What I'm hearing out there is the movement in the feeling of people in the state of Maine that we're with you.
Well, good luck.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good luck. I did write a letter to George Bush, too, 2 days after the election, and I asked him to resign. He hasn't resigned yet. But I promised him that if he didn't resign, I would do everything in my power to impeach him, like I can impeach anybody. But it was my happiest day since Casey died when I testified for John Conyers at the Downing Street memo.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
I just want to say, I just think the world of you. You're doing an amazing thing, standing up through your pain and reaching out to everyone else. And as far as lights, progressive lights coming together, I'm a Green Party voter, but I hang out on the Democratic Underground web forum. I live there.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful place for a lot of us to come together and talk. And right now, the big issue on that board is, of course, the Plame affair and the Downing Street memo as it ties into it. Are you starting to feel like, to steal a misadministration term, we're turning a corner on bringing some truth to light now that grand jury investigation is coming to a close?
Definitely. I really do. And it's due to brave people like John Conyers and Maxine Waters and Barbara Lee and Sheila Jackson Lee and Lynn Woolsey and Jan Schakowsky. And you notice most of the people I am saying, you know, aren't names like John. There's Sheila and Barbara and Jan and stuff like that. It's really, you know, I love men, you know, but it's really us women who are going to have to turn things around. We're going to have to. I was talking to people in another booth, and I said we have to be like those people in the Peloponnesian Wars and withhold our sex, and get this country, get the men on the right track, because, you know, I don't know. Or maybe we'll just inject them with female hormones. Any other questions?
I do have a quick question. You seem to know something about the inactive ready reserve. Do you feel that that's going to be, that they're going to be activated soon?
They're being activated all the time. Yeah, the IRR is always being activated. Yeah, they're doing it. They're even put up the age to 42 now, because they're just so desperate for bodies. So they don't have to draft, but we all know the draft is coming. And I tell people, don't resist it. Don't let your kids go.
You talked a little bit about the draft. Are you in favor of it?
No.
Because a lot of the people that you mentioned are sponsors of the bill.
Yeah. No, I am not in favor of letting any of our young people be eaten by the war machine, you know, through volunteer or conscription. And you don't cure evil with evil.
So. Hi, I wanted to ask about the John Conyers committee. I saw it on C-SPAN, and the treatment that the rest of the House gave it, stuffing it in a basement and stuff. Could you talk a little bit about how it felt to be there and what's become of it?
I don't care where we were. You know, I don't care if they've stuck us in the bathroom. What happened that day was historical and powerful. And it just really put the Republicans in a bad light for what they did. You know, they stuck us in that small room in the basement. They called 11 vote calls in that 3 hours. And they hadn't had 11 vote calls in 2 weeks. And, you know, I hate to say this, but it's called politics. And I'm sure the Democrats would have done the same thing to the Republicans if they were in power. But what happened that day was so amazing and powerful, it didn't really matter where we were or what the Republicans did, because it couldn't be stopped, because it's part of the light.
Okay, I want to thank all the war tax resistors, Henry David Thoreau, and everybody else who's got the guts to stand up against the military might, and want to send thanks to Star Gilmartin, Councillor of Lemoyne, for sponsoring Cindy Sheehan's talk here today. Please, just one more time. Thank you, Cindy.